This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Daly. Our guest this week is Washington State 4th District Representative Dan Newhouse. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Washington Congressman Dan Newhouse next. As a leader in the industry, we at Bayer have the opportunity and responsibility to help address the challenges around sustainability and ensure that we can all thrive while using our planet's resources in a sustainable way. Sustainability is an integral part of our operations, and we believe that farmers and agriculture can be a part of the solution to many of the planet's biggest challenges. Whether that's helping growers utilize new technologies to get more out of their land or incentivizing carbon-smart farming practices such as strip or no-till and planting cover crops, we're committed to innovate, grow, and partner with farmers to help shape what's possible and further our vision of health for all, hunger for none. For more on Bayer's sustainability efforts, visit www.bayer.com/en/US/United States Sustainability. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. As a member of the House Appropriations Committee, Washington State 4th District Representative Dan Newhouse is concerned about the rapidly rising debt of the U.S. government. Newhouse supported the debt and spending agreement between House Speaker McCarthy and President Biden. Newhouse says the fiscal security of the nation must be protected.
We have a tremendous problem facing our country, and that is the amount of debt that we face. I'm told now it's $32 trillion. Over the next decade, it's projected to be $50 trillion. I mean, that is a path that we cannot sustain. As we consider increasing our debt limit, I think it was incumbent upon us, it was required of us to look at what is putting us into this position, and that's overspending by the federal government. Having that conversation on how we can start to bend that curve of spending, I think this was the time to have that conversation, and we did. And we've made some, I think, some good decisions toward that by adopting a plan for this fiscal year to spend less than we did the last fiscal year. Not by a lot. It's compared to the overall budget, but I think it's a huge step in the right direction of what we need to do to reduce our overall debt. And that's, you know, in the next weeks and months, you're going to watch, the country's going to be able to watch enacting this plan play out. And it's not always going to be pretty. I've got to tell you, there's going to be a lot of people that will be very concerned about reducing federal spending from the last fiscal year. That has true impacts. It absolutely does. But I think this is a great time. And you asked my reaction, my impressions. I think this is a great time for us to prioritize federal spending because of the situation we find ourselves in. And so I'm committed to doing that, to getting our fiscal house in order. And I think there's a lot of people here in Washington, D.C. with that same resolution to get this done.
Clearly, there were members of Congress that wanted to spend more, and there were clearly members of Congress that wanted to spend a lot less. Perhaps there was an assumption that agreeing to spend no more on the farm bill than that of 23 would mean that we would spend the baseline of 23. But yet the bill that was marked up in the subcommittee of the appropriations shows a smaller spending figure on USDA, FDA than many expected, especially from the Democratic side of the aisle. How do you respond to the spending level that was offered now for legislators to write a farm bill?
So in order to get to the spending levels that are necessary to spend less this fiscal year than last. We've had to do some things that in some people's eyes are probably very difficult. Over the last couple of years, a lot of money has been spent to respond to the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic that, you know, the country and the world has gone through. So we've been able to essentially claw back some of those funds to backfill some of the reductions under certain categories in the agricultural spending proposal. And you're going to see that in other bills as well. The bottom line is the reductions have been minimized by utilizing those unspent COVID funds that now can be used to help shore up some of the priorities that we have in the Farm Bill. Keeping in mind the people depend on many of the things that the Farm Bill, the agricultural budget accomplishes. But doing this, instead of what on the surface looks to be close to a 30% reduction, by being able to, I use that word clawback because we're using that a lot, these COVID funds, these unspent COVID funds, it actually gets us to a point where year over year, we're looking at about a 2% reduction. So I think that's a very responsible reprioritization of federal funds so that we can get back to pre-COVID levels. Most people have recognized, and the president has actually signed legislation declaring that the pandemic is over. And so we need to get back to reasonable levels of spending and get away from the COVID era spending levels that really were in response to a very emergent situation in this country.
Major commodity groups would like to see an adjustment in the reference prices. They'd also like the chance to upgrade base acres, but these carry a hefty price tag. And I'm not sure all the details that your constituents in your district or of farmers in the West, but I would assume that there is need here as well. Once again, in writing farm policy, there's greater need than there are funds available. Who compromises here, or who is left perhaps with an inadequate safety net?
Well, one thing I got to say, Jeff, Chairman Thompson, G.T. Thompson, who's the chairman of the committee, the Agriculture Committee, who's, I think, just done a tremendous job of meeting with producers around the country. I think G.T.'s been to almost every state and intends to, by the end of this process, visit every state in the country to talk to people about priorities and needs and how we can meet those needs. I think through that kind of a process, we can put those learned needs into list of priorities so that we can do the best we possibly can to satisfy those needs and respond to people around the country, whether in the West, in my area, or the Southeast, or anywhere, where sometimes these priorities change and are different. But we have to, it's definitely going to be a balancing act. And I think through that kind of work, we'll be able to put together a program that is as fair as possible for everybody.
The debate on this won't fall in your subcommittee or the Appropriations Committee, but I would like to hear your thoughts. Senator Stabenow suggested that the work rule debate on nutrition was settled. Do you think that it's settled, or do you think that this may surface again in one chamber or the other?
I talked to Chairman Thompson about that, and there may be more discussion by some individuals that may want to see further adjustments to the work requirements. But I think by and large, that question has been answered, and that actually may help pave the way towards us being successful in getting the Farm Bill passed in a timely manner. Because as you saw, as you witnessed, that is a pretty controversial, contentious issue. And so by being able to address it sooner rather than later, I think actually did Mr. Thompson a favor by having that debate and being able to come to a resolution.
Congressman, the Supreme Court did strike down a number of pillars of the Biden-WOTUS rule, but there's been no mention from the administration or agencies of a rescission of that rule. In fact, a challenge of the injunction that's blocking the rule in 24 states. What's the message on WOTUS, and how do you interpret what Mr. Regan and President Biden are doing here?
We have been very vocal in encouraging and demanding that the Biden administration rescinds the WOTUS regulations. Certainly now that they are deemed unconstitutional, and we will continue to lend our strong voice through my office as well as through the Congressional Western Caucus, which I chair, to make sure that we move away from the WOTUS regulations into a what has now been deemed the constitutional way of moving forward and provide certainty to our landowners. I can only speculate as to Mr. Regan and Mr. Biden's motives and direction here. A little bit slow on the uptake, I would just have to say, and that the need to move forward is huge, and we will continue to encourage them to do just that.
I know that you chair, as you mentioned, the Western Caucus, but you also serve on the House Select Committee on strategic competition between the U.S. and China. And the ownership of U.S. land by foreign individuals has come to bear, and you've been in the midst of that. How do you enforce a rule without being overbearing on others that may be innocent?
That's exactly the point of disagreement that we encountered, was how do we be certain that we don't unnecessarily or wrongly focus on individuals who are not associated with the Communist Chinese Party. And that is absolutely our intention as well. So we are trying to be as specific as possible in legislative language and asking the Department of Agriculture as well as the Department of Treasury for the tools, the capabilities, the resources that they need in order to make that determination of who is and who is not associated with the CCP. Unfortunately, the system that we currently use in this country to monitor and report on foreign purchases of agricultural assets, how can I best say, is somewhat lacking, and it has never really, we've never really asked agencies to do what we're asking them to do now, and that is preclude certain parties from engaging in purchasing agricultural assets. So we are having to be creative and having to really sit down and look at what we need in order to accomplish that. But in no means, by no means, are we suggesting or want to focus on innocent individuals just because they happen to come or be descendants from any particular country. We are focused on United States adversaries, those countries who are not our allies. I believe, and many people agree with me, that we should not be allowing those countries and companies or representatives from those countries who are not our friends to be gaining a foothold in our food production industry in this country. I'm very confident we're going to get there. As you mentioned, I'm on the select committee for the Communist Chinese Party. We are working in a very bipartisan manner to accomplish this and rise up to many other challenges that the CCP is putting in front of us. And I'm confident that we're going to find the right solution in order to get this done as well.
Congressman, food waste was an issue in the 2018 Farm Bill, and you have legislation now regarding food labels. It's been a question for consumers at home, sold by, best used by, the different phrases that are on labels. How would your legislation help?
One of the things, as a farmer, I just find very, very concerning, knowing that we have a lot of hungry people in this country, and come to find out that fully 40% of the food that's produced in our country is wasted. Our legislation that I'm happy to co-sponsor with Ms. Pingree from the state of Maine is an effort to bring some clarity, I guess, some end of the confusion on what those dates on food products actually mean. Right now, there's no standardized definition for any of these dates. So, you know, best by, best if used by, freshness by, all of these different things are just dates that are put on by individual companies to try to help consumers make decisions. But many times these dates can expire, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with the food product, but it gets thrown out. And so we're trying to bring some clarity, some standardization to this, so people know when they look at a product what that date actually means and whether it's safe to consume or not. And so I'm very happy to be able to work in a bipartisan way to address this issue. I'm the co-chairman of the Food Recovery Caucus, and we'll continue to work on this so that we can try to reduce the amount of food that, you know, so many resources go into the production of, whether it's land and water, all of the inputs, the labor that goes into production of food, and then we end up tossing so much of it out. It's just truly an egregious amount of waste in time, inputs, and money that we really need to stop that so we can be more efficient and help feed more people.
Is there really a threat to the gas stoves in our kitchen from Washington?
Sounds incredible, doesn't it? Yeah, why in the world would we be wanting to turn our backs on a source of energy that has allowed us to reduce our carbon footprint as dramatically as we have over the last couple of decades? It escapes me why that makes sense to anybody. But it's absolutely true. This is, you know, sometimes things get arguments are made and debates get a little bit out of hand and accusations can fly. This is not an issue that has just been cooked up to get the political base excited so that we are in a better place for the next election. This is a true issue. We have evidence proof that this administration has been working on regulations to reduce the use of natural gas through kitchen appliances. This has been going on for over a year. In fact, and it's not just at the federal level. There are states in the country, New York, California, even my own state of Washington. There are regulations being promulgated to preclude natural gas from being used in new resident construction. And so my take on this, Jeff, just so you know, my eyes are wide open as to why this is happening. And I've got to say that this is kind of like the proverbial camel's nose under the edge of the tent scenario. This is an effort, and I think not a very well-covered effort to wean this country off of the use of fossil fuels as quickly as possible. And by removing consumer choice, by taking away one of the most efficient clean energy resources that we have for reasons to move to renewable energy sources versus fossil fuels, when natural gas and propane have such a tremendous track record of not only providing affordable clean energy source, but is in abundance and allows millions of Americans. In fact, I think the number is something like 187 million Americans utilize gas for preparing their meals. This is beyond the pale as to why this makes any sense at all. And so this is not an invented issue. This is something that we've been able to address here in Congress. We just passed a bill yesterday to preclude the Department of Energy from moving forward with further regulations on this issue. And I hope the Senate takes it up and we can send it to the President for enactment into law. As proposed, that the Department of Energy would cause at least half, and some people are saying over 90% of the gas stoves on the market today would fail the regulatory tests that are being proposed by the Department of Energy, essentially making it unattainable for millions of Americans to choose that resource choice, make that resource choice. In many parts of the country, we're blessed in the state of Washington, I think, for a lot of reasons, but we don't have hurricanes, we don't have tornadoes typically, we don't have the kind of natural disasters that many parts of the country do. When those things happen, almost every single time the power goes out. Most of the time you still have your gas supply available to you. So people can, in an emergency situation, can still utilize gas to prepare their meals. So there's so many reasons why this is an important issue.
Well, Congressman Newhouse, it's a joy to have a farmer on the program, and certainly a farmer who serves in the halls of Congress and stands up for an industry. Thank you for your service, and certainly thank you for your time of being with us today on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and, sir, you've got the last word today.
Well, Jeff, I just want to say thank you to you and to AgriPulse for focusing on those issues that are important to rural America, that are important to our agricultural industry. That's a big job. There's so many things that are out of control, out of the control of farmers and producers. But some of those things, we can control and work very hard to control. And that's what happens at the government and the impacts of laws and rules and regulations have on our ability to produce the food and fiber that our country so desperately needs. So I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk a little bit about some of these issues, and look forward to a continuing conversation on something that's so important for the agricultural industry in the United States of America.
Our thanks to Washington State 4th District Representative Dan Newhouse, our guest this week on the Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Bayer and their vision of health for all, hunger for none. Learn more at Bayer.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.